United States v. Davila Rodriguez.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is William Shirley. I represent Lorenzo Davila Rodriguez in his appeal. I'd like to concentrate on two issues during my oral argument. First, although Crawford v. Washington has been stated by most all of the circuits to not apply to sentencing, the Supreme Court also has not decided whether Crawford v. Washington applies to sentencing. And I would like to ask a radical rhetorical question here. If sentencing is not part of a criminal prosecution, why do the courts appoint lawyers for sentencings for indigent defendants? But what all this gets down to in this...
You're not suggesting we ought to change that, are you?
Appointing lawyers?
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously I'm appointed to this case, Your Honor. No, I'm not suggesting that you don't appoint lawyers, but I am suggesting that if lawyers are appointed to run the course of the prosecution and the prosecution involves sentencing, we're not cut off after the defendant pleads guilty. We're continued through sentencing. And I'm suggesting that if we are continued through sentencing, that there is a argument that could be made that attorneys are necessary at sentencing, and that's because this is a continuing part of the criminal prosecution. But what all this gets down to in this case is the reliability of the statements, the reliability of the evidence that was introduced at sentencing. This court has suggested that in United States versus Trujillo, 959 F. 2nd, 1377 in 1992, that clear and convincing evidence might be required for extraordinary upward departures or adjustments. Here, Mr. Davila Rodriguez was charged with distributing 5 kilograms or more of cocaine. At sentencing, he was sentenced on the basis of 200 kilograms of cocaine, plus was given a managerial role. The primary evidence against him at sentencing was presented by Agent Fremgen, who simply related what other agents had recorded during co-defendant proffers. When under cross-examination, Agent Fremgen could not answer many basic questions concerning what he had testified to. He was asked on page 29 of the transcript concerning transportation of cocaine. I asked him, "Do you know any of the facts about the transportation?" He answered, "No, I don't, other than it was in the trunk of a Cadillac." I asked him about a duffel bag of money. He responded that Mr. Davila Rodriguez might not even known about the money in the bag. That was on page 29 of the transcript. I asked him whether or not a scale was seized at Mr. Rodriguez's house. That was on page 31 of the transcript. He replied that he would have to go back and look. He was not sure who, also on page 31, he was not sure who was in control of various drug transactions. And in fact, between page 31 and 32, he said, "Could there have been an instance where it went the other way, or where co-defendants did each other favors?" He answered yes. I asked him about 60 kilograms of cocaine that the police seized here in the Chicago area. I mentioned that the proffer doesn't mention, the proffer he was referring to, did not mention Lorenzo Davila Rodriguez controlling that 60 kilograms of cocaine. He responded that because of the nature of the conspiracy, Mr. Lorenzo Davila Rodriguez was responsible for that. Page 33, I asked him whether or not Mr. Davila Rodriguez was just a mule or carrier. The answer, I'm sure he was paid, but I don't know how or how much. I think this all gets to the strength or the reliability of the testimony against Mr. Davila Rodriguez, and I would suggest to the court that this is insufficient to sentence Mr. Davila Rodriguez on the basis of 200 kilograms of cocaine. My second major issue is with respect to the third point off for acceptance of responsibility. According to the sentencing guidelines, 3E1.1B, it is true that the government must move for that third point reduction. My argument here is that, as set forth in my objections to the pre-sentence report, that there was an applied offer to receive that third point off for acceptance of responsibility if Mr. Davila Rodriguez indicated that he would plead guilty by May 10th, 2004. At this point, I'll step down and let counsel for the government speak.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Porter.
Good morning. May it please the court, Mr. Shirley. I'll try to address Mr. Shirley's arguments in the order that he gave them, which are, of course, not the order that they are in the brief. The evidence that the court relied upon to sentence Mr. Davila Rodriguez was hours-long testimony of one of the main case agents in the case, not the only case agent, but one of the main case agents in an older case who had gone to great length to go through and to document what he was testifying from, the individual reports, what he based it upon. And he was, as Mr. Shirley points out, subjected to lengthy cross-examination. What Mr. Shirley does, I believe, is pull out one or two instances that really don't mean anything to the overall finding that the court made. The court found that Mr. Davila Rodriguez should be held responsible for at least 200 kilograms of cocaine, and the court based that upon three specific sets of facts. One was a 50-kilogram deal that was brought about by a man by the name of Morales. Another was a 90-kilogram deal that was actually three separate deals that amounted to 90 kilograms that was done with a man by the name of Jackie Wilson. And then the third was a 60-kilogram deal that was purchased here in Chicago and was being brought back down to be redistributed in the Southern District of Illinois. Often during the sentencing process, Mr. Shirley admitted yes, the 50-kilogram deal and the 90-kilogram deal were accurate, and the evidence about them was accurate, but he disputed the 60-kilogram deal. Focusing on that deal, the court found things like, and among other things, that Mr. Davila Rodriguez actually made multiple telephone calls to arrange the deal, that he sent particular people up to do the deal, to accept the cocaine and to bring it back. He sent two carloads, one with the actual cocaine in it, and another carload of individuals to watch and to report on that first carload, that while the cocaine was being brought back, that the second car loader, the watch car, saw the first car stopped. They called and asked for advice. Mr. Davila Rodriguez indicated that how they should hide themselves and obfuscate and hide their identification and things like that so that they couldn't be brought up in it. And then he later talked about the deal, about how much money they had lost on the deal. Based upon all this, it was eminently reasonable for the court to find, by a preponderance of the evidence, that Mr. Davila Rodriguez was responsible for that amount. As to the second point, it was certainly not error for the court to deny the third point for acceptance of responsibility. Third point is made on the government's motion, and it's within the government's discretion. And as I point out in the brief, we don't believe there should be a review of that executive discretion absent an allegation that there was some sort of impermissible or unconstitutional basis for failing to give it.
Would there be if, in other words, if you reneged on an offer?
If the government had promised the third point based on a particular set of facts and then simply reneged all the facts had come true, I think that might be a reviewable one, because I think that would be contrary to that kind of an offer. There certainly was not that kind of an offer in this case. There were inquiries made of Mr. Shirley as to whether or not his client would plead, whether he would admit all of his conduct, whether he would put the government to proof about not only a separate case, but also the conduct in this case. None of those requests or letters that were written to Mr. Shirley were ever responded to. Mr. Shirley simply responded his client intended to plead. And so that left the government with the duty of preparing for all kinds of scenarios, depending on what position Mr. Davila Rodriguez took. There was no promise of any kind. There was no plea agreement. There was no contract. There was nothing like that in this case. There was no clear language from Mr. Davila Rodriguez about what he wanted to do. In fact, he did nothing that would permit the government to avoid preparing, which the government had to do. Based upon all of that and all of the factors in this case, Your Honors, I would certainly ask the court to affirm the sentence of the trial court in this case, as it was reasonable based upon the guidelines and properly imposed under all of the law. If there are no further questions, I'll step back.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, sirs.
Mr. Shirley, you have 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Your Honor. Your Honor, according to U.S. versus Bowler, 585 F. 2nd, 851, which is Seventh Circuit, 1978, the government is to be held to high standards in plea bargaining, good faith obligation implied. Here in the government's brief, the government stated in page 10 that the government only moves for the reduction, the third point reduction, when the defendant has significantly assisted authorities, citing United States versus Burrell. It's at the bottom of page 10 and the top of page 11. However, the sentencing guideline itself says that in 3E1.1B, the reduction can come if the defendant has assisted authorities in the investigation or prosecution of his own misconduct by timely notifying authorities of his intention to enter a plea of guilty, thereby permitting the government to avoid preparing for trial and permitting the government and court to allocate their resources more efficiently. Mr. Davila Rodriguez did so indicate by the deadline set forth in the letter, which is included in my objections to the pre-sentence report. If there are any more questions.
Well, thank you, Mr. Shirley. Thank you for taking the appointment to represent your client in this case.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case will be taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow morning.